This is Laura Waters, who went overseas during World War I. Could you tell me? Can you tell me why you went overseas and with whom?
Because my brother was a soldier over there. I had argued him into going and got him into the Marines. And then we came here to Washington when we knew he was going overseas. And so, I just got to keep on talking.
Okay. How did you happen to go? About the hospital.
Then I went to work in Columbia Hospital?
Yeah.
I don't have to tell the funny part of the story, should I?
No, anything, sure.
Well?
Sure, tell it.
I went to Red Cross to find out how I could get overseas. And I went into their employment room, who they were enrolling, what they were doing, volunteers, these were. And I said, yes, I could volunteer. My father was sitting outside when I did it. And the boys, the Marines were, you know.
Quantico.
And there was nothing but a sea of mud down there, you know. So we couldn't even stay anywhere near it. So we drove back to stay at the hotel here in Washington. So when I went to Red Cross, I found my brother was going to go over shortly. He went over within a week after that. And Lucy Miniger, when she talked to me, she said, well, if you wanted to be a nurse, she said, and the best way for you to be one is where you can go, she said, they are taking girls who have had some nurses training, and the best thing is to get a foundation in that, because that was what you'd need if you went overseas in the nursing capacity. So she said, Columbia Hospital, and you can go there and train, and then maybe whenever they're calling for aides, then someone to go, we'd approve of your going. We would, meaning the whole establishment would. Well, I did that when I went in, which would be around July. It was early July, I guess, at that time, because my brother went over later in the month. And because we never got to see him again after that time. We went down in his sea of mud and saw him, and he went over. Now, from there on, I came out and told my father, I said, well, I'm going to go now into nursing, going to go into a hospital and train to go. Well, he didn't like the idea, of course, but still, what could he do about it? He had brought me to see the brother, and that's all he had was my brother and me. My mother had already died. So I went in training, and when it came time that I thought I should go overseas, Miss Minigrode said no, didn't think I should. But she, when I went down to the Red Cross and saw her, she said, no, you shouldn't go in. And I said, why? She said, it isn't logical for every nurse who's trained for a few months or whatever it may be to go overseas. Well, this was in July, and as I say, that was in July, but I think it was June. And so I went in from the hospital because I said, I was glad to get in. I said, I'll play it from here then. I'm trying to think of it. Girl's name, the one up in Pennsylvania, who was on the ship with me.
Uh-huh.
Because they just made me head of it to the point of where, when they didn't return 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
After saying goodbye to my father, my home was a hospital. It's like I have no home now.
How long was it before you went overseas?
Hmm?
How long before you went overseas?
So I went in training as a probationer at the college, and in those days they trained us in the first days to work with the colored ward. And I came up north where I didn't even know any colored people, and I felt I was kind of a low job. But I got in it and got to learn all the little tricks that you have to learn now with white people, or go to a college and learn it out of a book if you can. That's what they're doing now, it seems. Everyone that's here, they're not doing any training. I you see, maybe serving a bedpan up to us. They're really...
It's so old.
And...
in about a year.
I had passed the tests on the first grade, you might say. Mm. And then I was in the second, and I was up on the second floor, or third floor, and I was in Serbia. I got to even take care of white babies. That was part of it, too. And so I was still training in the hospital. That's all I knew. I had to have some nurses training. And then I went down to the Red Cross to see if I could go in as a nurse. Mm-hmm. I'd been there about a year, and she said no, that they weren't taking training. They won't take nurses out of training now because it's depleting the hospitals every place. Everybody wants to go overseas. They're just mad to go to war. And I felt very badly about that. So I did ask a question or two, and it made her kind of angry at me. So she said no, that she would not approve of me if I quit and did something else and then went over. She would not approve of it. So I knew that I just had to do something else. So I quit. And I went to work down the government, passed the government exam, and went to work and became head of the office of the library for the war people down in the old War Trade Board buildings, all the little white buildings that they just, some of them were down, I think, some of them are down there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked in that library, and then I got unhappy about it because I wasn't getting anywhere, so I had to do something else. So when I found I couldn't, I said, well, I'll go to New York. Nobody's trying down here anymore. And I'll go up to New York. I went to New York cold, as you might say, didn't know a soul. Walked into the Red Cross, and into the YMCA, rather, because one of those four girls had gone over, and her father had developed. I knew she had gone through her father's help. And so I didn't know what she went over as, but I knew she went to war. I was going to send you her name, but it just slips me this minute, but it comes to me in just a minute, I think. And anyway, the point that I want to make, sorry.
Doesn't matter about her name. Huh? Doesn't matter about her name, just go ahead.
Oh, all right, sure. Just a minute.
You went to Red Cross in New York?
Huh? I went, no, that was to the YMCA then.
Oh, yeah.
And the YMCA said, well, they would take me over as a canteen worker, but with a story like that, because I told them why I wanted to be the nurse, but they didn't let me. Mm. And so this girl, the woman by the name of Johnson, was the one with the Red Cross, I believe it was, because she said, this woman that I was talking to was with the YMCA. And she said, well, that nurse is training. If you had a year's training, you should go over. You should go with the Red Cross. It's nurses they need. They can get canteen workers now pretty well, mm-hmm. although they're still taking them on. Because after all, they didn't cost them anything, except they get to eat them and sleep them, as you might say. Mm-hmm. So the woman who was interviewed in the YMCA said, but if you had as much training as that, I'd like to have you go over and let me a minute, I'm going to call the Red Cross. So she did. She called the Red Cross and they said, and to tell them about a little bit about me. And they said, you have to come over, send me over. So I went over and this woman interviewed me and she said, if your story is true, if that's the only reason that the Red Cross won't take you from Washington, well, I think we can take you here, from here. Mm-hmm. She's here telling me the truth. She picked up the telephone, she dialed, and she called Columbia House, and I was scared to death. I was afraid they'd give a negative on that, you know. And told them, I don't know if they knew me yet. And he said, well, we'd like to know something about her record, because she was in here applying for a position to go overseas. And they said, we just want to find out what her record was down there. Well, they said her record was all right. What was her record? Her work was A1. Well, why, what happened? Well, there was a mix-up with the real superintendent of Columbia Hospital. He's a volunteer worker at the Red Cross, and her Miss Leach story is true. They wouldn't let her go because they was a nurse out of training, and she had voluntarily gave up. And she said, it's true, it was disrupting. Miss Augerbright was the name of the woman in that. Yes, it's true that I was disrupting. Everybody wanted to quit and go to France. So, the head of the Red Cross said, that's the case, thank you. He said, you can go over with it on the next assignment. And the next assignment was in about 2 or 3 weeks. And so, I enlisted. I had to be medically examined again by a doctor in New York here, and he sent me down to a hospital. Well, it is the old number one, what's the big hospital down here? That great big hospital down below. Big
Washington
hospital.
General? Huh? Washington General?
No.
Walter Reed? Walter Reed?
No, not uptown. It is a big, the big hospital. Turn that off. I was examined at this particular hospital, which everybody went to those days, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and everybody, an older person, will all remember that, too.
Okay.
And so, meantime, I was taking French lessons, and then, within a week or two, I was on my way to France. My father had come down to Kingsport, Tennessee. And the other thing that I meant to tell you about the doctor, when he was going to examine me, I said, if you found any infection or anything in the urine, why, it's because I just didn't get out of the bed having flu. They didn't call it flu those days. What did they call it? That's
cold?
All.
Pneumonia?
Hmm?
Well, it doesn't matter.
But it didn't make any difference. You know, and I even told the doctor that, so anyway. Yeah. Well, I went overseas, all went out. The nine girls, and went down, got on the boat. And the boat was the Canada, the name of the ship. And we went out that night, and no one on the white, not a bit of white troops on, white officers and black troops. And we had that night on the river, we saw around the upper deck, we girls looked down and saw all of these colored people and beautiful singing and all that sort of thing. It was wonderful outgoing. In the morning, we woke up, we were all back tied up at the dock.
Why?
Well, they found out it wasn't safe, they said, for us. Well, they had all sorts of stories out. One said there was a bomb that they'd found, and the convoy wasn't going, and all that. Instead of that, we got off the ship, all of we girls walked across the pier, everybody got off the pier, and got on the Megantic, SS Megantic, and we found out later on. Yeah, we never did find out the truth of it. They said it was that it's true that they were afraid to send a small number of white girls over on a ship.
Is that right?
With all the troops. And we were out just about a day and a half, and Edith Mary, I think was her name, a Boston girl from up in New England, and she was given charge of us. She was a head Red Cross girl. If she's alive, she knew all this part of the story too. She got seasick first day out. And so when the doctor sent downstairs to help her nurses, there was no nurses. And so he said then to the doctors, see what women were going to do. And Miss Edith Mary was in her boudoir, you might say, on a ship in the Gandhi, which is a good-sized ship, big one. And there is a... But I don't think there were any other troops, no other women troops on that boat. But there were all kinds of... with all men, but they were all white officers. Uh-huh. We had colored people, but we didn't have the troops, all of them.
Yeah.
And when we were out the second to third day, the slow crossing, or second or third day, we got where Miss Mary said to me, and she said, but I'd go up and see what the doctor wanted, and I did. And of course the doctor began cussing, in American cuss, using the American cuss words, talking about what he thought of the army, and sending a bunch of women, all supposed to be, not a woman, not a nurse among the whole crowd. And I said, I had had some training. How much did I had? I said, a year or so. And when he said, you got a uniform? And I said, yes, he put it on. Well, the result was that a girl from up in the, lived in Harrisonburg. Yes, up in Harrisonburg. Harrisonburg, Virginia, but anyway, was the other girl and I, because she had had some training, but not enough to mount anything, and there was the only one that had had nurses, any kind of nurses. The others were all canteen, going over to do whatever work they were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it developed the next day off, or second day after that, we two found ourselves out in the hospital of the ship. And we worked in the hospital, and by the time we got overseas, every berth was filled in the hospital. And we two girls, our meals were served there and everything, all the way over, the two of us. I'll never forget that departure of the trip.
No.
And I think I turned off on it too.
Laura Lutz Waters, born in Minneapolis, Minnesota, was in World War I. She was loved by both the D.C. and the Tampa Bay Women's Overseas Service League units. She died on 18 June 1983 in her a 93rd year. This oral record was made with difficulty due to her shortness of breath and other ailments. It was never completed because of her poor condition and ensuing death. However, Laura's life and accomplishments were so outstanding that even this partial history becomes precious. After a year's nursing training in Washington, D.C. in 1917, Laura went to France with the American Red Cross, serving in hospitals and canteens. She recalled handing out bowls of soup to the wounded in dugouts, helping her crutch club boys near Bordeaux, and later distributing bread to war refugees. On her return from Europe, Laura established an import business in New York City. In 1929, she returned to D.C. and founded the Waters Travel Service, which she operated until she sold it in 1964. It still carries her name. A lengthy article appearing in the Washington Star in 1938 named Laura as the only woman to own and operate a travel bureau in the capital, and added that Mrs. William Howard Taft was her first important customer. She had conducted her first tour to Europe in 1929. Known as the lady with the little red hat, she always included one in her travel wardrobe, so that her clients would be able to follow her. In 1930, she took an 18-car train to carry about 4,000 of her tourist group to the Century of Progress International Exposition, the Chicago World's Fair. She later took groups to the coronation of Britain's King George and Elizabeth II. Laura Lutz was the first white child to enter Alaska when taken there by her family in 1898, at the peak of the gold rush. Other firsts, F-I-R-S-T-S, included. She was the first woman elected a director of the American Society of Travel Agents. She also set a first in 1950 when she became the first American woman to preside over a national travel convention in her capacity as chairwoman of the first ASTA Washington Conference, that's American Society of Travel Agents. A magazine writer, lecturer, and active club woman, Laura was a former member of the president of the Washington chapter of the Business and Professional Women's Club. Also, she was a founding member and vice president of the Seroptimist Club and the Women's City Club. For years, she was active in the Women's Overseas Service League. She was an early member of the Society of Women Geographers and formed the Wanderlust Club. Laura was the first president of the National Parks Club of America, and she also conducted lectures and tours throughout properties of the National Park Service. Laura was decorated by the President of Mexico in 1949. She was presented with a plaque in Paris in 1951 for, quote, outstanding contributions to travel, end quote. Indeed, she was noted throughout Europe for her efforts to help rebuild Europe through tourism after World War II. Years later, Laura continued to conduct periodic pilgrimages to Alaska, where she had gone as a child. Typical of her sense of humor and imagination is the ending statement in her travel brochure for the travel service that she operated. It was as follows, quote, 1998, the first 100 years are the hardest. Laura Waters organizes and conducts personally her first tour to the rocket to the moon, by the rocket to the moon, end quote. A close friend of hers writes, countless people scattered throughout the world who shared Laura's close memories with her and to whom she had extended a helping hand or whose lives she touched through kindness, generosity, or friendship. All of us who were Laura Waters fans were deeply enriched by knowing her and sharing her friendship. Even after death, Laura wanted to be able to say thank you to those who kept in touch, to those whose friendship meant so much to her, to those who needed a lift. Laura was rich in memories and friends. She had an instant recall for people, places, and events, and loved to share them with others. Those of us who loved her will never forget her. Our lives are richer for having known her.